How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, listeners, to A Tale of Two Hygienists, episode 51, with Michelle and Andrew.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Andrew. Yeah, 51. That's pretty good.
51. Okay. Yeah.
So
crazy.
With the 50th episode, that was really good. We got a lot of love from all our fans, so thank you, everybody. Mm-hmm. But now it feels like it's an uphill battle to make it to 100. Like, we're like... 50 was a good number. Now I'm like, holy crap. We got a lot more episodes to get to 100. And we're supposed to do at least 200 of these.
But so, like, just today I had three people that were like, we should do an episode on this. Which is so wonderful. Like,
that is wonderful. We have
so much still out there to talk about and people to chat with. And last night, so I should say, I'm in New York at Greater New York meeting. And I'm sitting in my Airbnb right now. And last night I got in and went to coffee chat with Anastasia, where they had Debbie Z and, Debbie Gibson. And then a dentist that I just met for the first time, and his name is escaping me completely. It was put on by Oral-B, Crest Oral-B. It was really great. And then I went to a networking event with Tracy Butler from Straumann, and I just love that woman. I can't get enough of her.
She'll be on soon.
She is. Yeah. And met a lot of other great, amazing people and saw some really familiar faces. And then met Tony Stefano, which I'm not going to explain it because I'm not going to do it well, but he's going to be on the podcast. And he has something like he teaches you how to sell to dentist. And I love his perspective, and we talked last night because we went to dinner afterwards about my issues with selling and my issues with the business side of it and the DSOs and things like that, and how we have to change perspective and we have to learn communication because it's health is the end result, not sales is the end result, and it's all about coming from a different perspective. And I think that's just incredibly smart because it engages the minds like myself that are more emotional and makes me want to sell, even though because I don't feel like I'm selling. It's for health. It's for the end result. The end game is the patient's health. So then that makes me happy. So super awesome dude. He's definitely going to have to be on the podcast. And then today I made friends with, Melissa is a fan listener now. Melissa, I am not going to say your last name because I will butcher the hell out of it. So she, and then Natalia is a friend of hers, and I met them at today. Well, I didn't meet Melissa. I've known her, and they teach at a college here in New York, and so they were here, and I saw Christy from PDT and Linda Miller, and it's just been so lovely. And I know you hate me a lot because I kind of did this last minute, and you want to be here.
Yeah. I'm pretty upset about it, but you know what? We can only do what we can do. And I think I'm not as upset the fact that I'm not there, but the fact that you are not recording any of these conversations. I think that's where I'm most upset. It's been so many conversations
that in the last 2 weeks that I was like, God, what I need is a handheld thing.
So I went to the Dollop podcast on Saturday, right?
Oh, I'm so jealous of that.
They have the same recording device that I have.
I noticed. Oh, really?
Yeah. So they have it. I mean, I don't know if we call it a soundboard or whatever, that big old desk that has all the little knobs everywhere. Like, it was really, really high tech. And then you saw all their little cables fitting into the little Zoom thing. H6, I think is what they have too. So,
did you talk to them?
No. They stuck around, but I didn't go with Allison. And so I kind of felt bad about leaving her. And so they'll come back to Portland again. I mean, it was 600 seats and it was sold out. So I'm sure they'll come back again. And everyone loved them. And it was a really good episode. I think actually, so they were in Seattle and then they were in Portland and they went down to San Francisco. They've already released the Seattle one. So the one I went to on Saturday will probably come out this next week. So for those that don't know,
The Dollop is a podcast. It's two comedians, improv comedians, and they are pretty much just telling a story from history. Mm-hmm. And it is so comical.
So the one guy does all the research, and then the other guy has no idea what's coming. And so he just kind of interjects along the way and asks like,
but it's the most absurd, obnoxious stories in history.
It is very much not suitable for work and not suitable for in the car with children kind of thing.
No, not at all.
It's very irreverent, but it was great. It was so fun. They had Will Anderson, who was on a lot of their Australian tour ones. He's Australian, and they made fun of the whole Trump thing.
Oh yeah,
for
I did
while.
Hear those.
Anyways, mm-hmm. It was fantastic. Anyways, but they have the same recording device I have. So basically what I'm saying is Alan Mead from Dental Hacks, I have it and the Dollop people have it. So you should probably just get one.
Except I'm the cheapest person in the world and can't drop. How much?
I think they're only like $400 or something like that.
Something
crazy.
$400.
It's all right.
I'm too cheap.
Anyways,
especially since I just ruined my boots. I got to buy new boots.
Sorry to hear that. I care.
Priorities, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Boots. So, anywho.
So, today, on this episode, we have Karen Siebert. And I'm very excited because she was great.
Karen!
Do you remember that she brought you coffee?
I love her.
You
yeah. Part? Oh, I remember.
She was the best interview.
She's something.
I love her so much.
So
Karen,
sweet.
I hope you know that I love you. She's very helpful. She was one of the first people, I think, in this industry that decided to be my friend. In like, not really necessarily like really, she wanted to connect me. She wanted me to succeed. She wanted to help me. She was, she's an educator and you could tell that's her passion. And, I really liked learning a little bit more about her personal story, and not just her professional life, but she's just a great person all around. So we will see her soon. She's probably there, isn't she? Greater New York.
No, well,
you won't be able to
I haven't
find
made
her.
It that. I haven't
the haystack,
been to that booth.
Anyways,
this place is
it's a
huge.
Good episode. So listeners, I hope you enjoy it. Hey, Michelle.
Yeah.
It's time for the interview.
Well, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine.
Listeners, welcome to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists. This is Andrew, your favorite. And
no.
Your second favorite
is
Michelle.
Oh,
hi, Michelle.
Day three at Under Day One Roof. Three. We just did a live Facebook feed, if you caught that, where Andrew says he hates you all. So who's your favorite?
I said I didn't love you enough to do the Facebook feeds all the time. I'm not a fan of the Facebook Live thing. I don't know. I'm too old for that stuff.
Or you're too much of an introvert for that stuff.
We have an audio podcast for a reason. I'll just put it that way.
What do you have in your hand right now?
a microphone.
Okay.
And this is a beautiful view, again, of the harbor.
This is it's Potomac River. Potomac River.
Potomac?
Potomac? Potomac River. Potomac. Potato, potato. Potomac, Potomac.
It's happening. It's happening. Listeners, this is for you.
That was Andrew's health yes. going down the drain.
This is a 8.4 floral ounce Red Bull. Ugh. Shout out to Red Bull.
Shout Thank out you. To coffee.
Starbucks? Is that what we did?
Yeah, Starbucks, because the wonderful Karen Siebert brought me coffee this morning. Am I saying your last name right?
Yeah.
I'm blowing up at RDH under one roof.
That's 4 for 4 or something wow. like that. She's terrible.
I usually
names.
Kill them, like murder them, stomp on them afterwards.
Like Andrew, like she just can't, for whatever reason, can't figure this out.
I just don't want to say your name properly. But you are from American Eagle. Karen's one of our buddies. We see her at all these exhibits. Yeah.
We go way back to like...
I was going
to
say Andrew and Karen.
6 months ago? 8 months
ago? Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Something like that.
Is that it?
I think so. When did we start talking?
I feel like I've known you forever.
That's what it feels like, for sure.
I think it was just at midwinter that we met in person.
I think so. And then...
Oh, really?
Maybe a little bit before that, because I think Lewis and I might have like started talking about Hygiene Town, and that's kind of where you came in.
Oh, yeah, because you're
We'd
a big Hygiene Town,
maybe
right?
email then, friends yeah. at that point or something,
Email
right?
best friends, I think, at that point.
And so are you big in Hygiene Town?
Not big. I love it, though, and we got to go to the show this past spring, and it was very cool. It's a very different kind mm-hmm. of show, and it's fun. Great people there.
Yeah.
She was on my hygiene roundtable.
Oh,
yes,
that's right.
Yeah, that was
yeah.
a lot of fun.
I was trying to manage that, but it just didn't work out. I was at
Yeah, I felt very else. Lucky to get there. That was yeah. a lot of fun. Yeah.
It was. I mean, we had Daniel was there and Linda was there. And
gotta love Daniel.
Right? Uh-huh. Shout out to Daniel. Daniel, we love you.
I'm very jealous. That is pretty exciting.
Yeah, we leave in 7 days, so...
We love you, Daniel.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. Shout out to Daniel, right? So
Lopez,
the interview.
Lolo. I'm trying to think. I'm rolling with nicknames for him.
Oh, my. I bet. Oh. Okay,
I'm just going to test him out when I'm in Africa to see what, you know, best friends
see
do that.
See what sticks.
Best friends do that.
You start throwing a bunch at him.
Yeah.
Like, no. No
it like, should Daniel's be fun. Good.
Actually, yeah. we had a, on our episode, didn't he say that he goes by Jeremy?
Yeah, his family call him Jeremy.
Whoa, that's
yeah.
news.
Yeah,
which,
right?
Yeah, we didn't know. I mean, I've seen that like on his like Facebook. That's his yeah. whole name, but I'm like, that's weird.
Yeah. Okay. But the general world knows him as Daniel
yes,
Lopez.
We do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the interview today, this is where I'd like to go if it's all right, Karen, with you.
You can do whatever. Yeah.
We
whatever.
Want our listeners to know about you, the person. Like, who are you? And then like everything you can tell us. And then getting into what your job is now, because you're everywhere, so...
Like I am everywhere.
You.
That's kind of
yeah.
scary.
Omnipresent.
Omnipresent, right? Yeah.
When you start seeing that's my name on the bathroom wall, please let me know and try and take an eraser to it, would you? That's just uncool.
Well, it's me writing so. It, so I'm going to take an eraser to it.
Gosh, you know, I am a pretty average person. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. I really...
Shout out to Chicago.
Yahoo!
Yeah, we do like Chicago. Yeah, and this is going to be in Chicago next
yes,
year.
Yes.
So wait, are you living in Chicago now?
No, I live about an hour north of Chicago. I lived in Chicago for about 7 years.
Still, you're going to be so
the
close.
The job of my life when I lived in Chicago, that was probably the turning point in my dental hygiene career was my job in Chicago. So... I miss living in the city. 24 years later, I still feel like I can say, I live in the city, but I don't, and it's been a long time. But yeah, I have a great family. Oh my gosh, I have terrific two sisters, and a brother. Let's see if I can count, because it's so early this morning.
No.
My parents are hilarious. You can barely keep up with them. They think
that.
They apparate like Harry Potter, because they're just everywhere all the time. So,
did you actually read Harry Potter? Like, did you read all of
Oh,
them?
Yeah. I read every Harry Potter.
Have you?
The minute they came
yeah,
out.
Yeah, Allison made me.
I didn't know you read.
I try not to.
Took
me a
Harry
long
Potter.
Time to do it.
That was a blast, and they were coming out when my kids were, like, the right age for it, too. So
yeah.
We just had so much fun. We've even done a family trip to Harry Potter Land, you know, in Florida because we're geeks.
I love
we're
it. Harry. I love
geeks.
It so
what's,
much.
What's the term? Is there a term, like Harry Potters?
What oh, I don't know.
Is there, like, a term?
Oh, there's
like
no.
the. What's the Twilight ones?
We're not into that.
Know.
Oh, there's like terminology that I just can't.
There's like Whovians for Doctor Who fans.
See, like, there's got to be something.
There probably is, and I don't know. Yeah, that I don't know. But we've had a lot of fun with that.
Get on that hashtag and get in there.
It's kind of died out. You know, the kids have grown up a little bit. All the books have been read, you know.
Michelle's just not finding out about it. Yeah. So.
Like, this Harry Potter you're talking about.
Right?
What is this that you speak of?
So, I have three kids myself. They are 24, 21, and 17, which is really hard to believe. I can say life moves fast. You think it's going to be forever that your kids are little and it's going to drag on, and all of a sudden they're out of college and bam, into life.
So. Can I ask you about that a little bit? So now that they're older, have you been able to enjoy them more, or is it like different?
I'd say different. I've always enjoyed my kids. They'll probably laugh if they listen to this and go, "You did not." But I love all the stages. I love little kids. I'm a big fan. I have a new nephew who is 1.5, and anytime I have a chance, I go downtown and I babysit him because he's just like food for the soul. You know, those big, huge smiles they have. But I love this teenage years too because they have their own selves. Their personalities are really developing, and it's so fun to see them turn into people with their own drive and goals, and it's very, very cool. We're going to orientation for my son to go to DePaul this fall, and we're going to go on Wednesday. So that's
sorry,
an exciting
DePaul's
moment.
In Chicago, right?
Yes, it is. Okay. DePaul University.
It's not too far.
Right, that's in the good. City. He's just wanted to live in the city. He's so excited. Nice. So he's 21. Who wouldn't want to live in the city at 21, right?
That's Chicago's beautiful.
Yeah, I was going to say Chicago. I love New York. Like, I think my soul once upon a time lived in New York. Because I just like the energy. But when I went to Chicago, I was like, it's like a smaller, cleaner New York.
It is. I thought that's that when I went to New York. Yeah.
Is it? No, so I didn't just make that up on my own? No, maybe I heard it somewhere.
Oh, that really is for real?
No.
I was going to say, shut up. I didn't even know it.
How great would that be?
The smaller, cleaner New York.
Yeah, the tourism board.
Well, they call Charleston New York or New Orleans older, sober sister.
Oh, my gosh. That's cute. Are you sure the sober part can stay in there?
No, because Charleston is a drinking town with a history problem. That's its slogan. You wonder why I drink so much. It's a drinking town.
I don't wonder why you drink so much.
It was in my blood. Charleston is a drinking town. We also call it Neverland. I see. Because no one grows up there.
Why should I have a 23 in me for that?
Which part?
For the alcoholism.
Oh, so we have to discuss this at a later date because I did what Carrie told me to do, and I unlocked the beast of all the genetic testing. And, yeah, alcoholism is in my family like multiple times.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Have you heard of 23andMe?
No.
Oh, yeah. You have to listen to our podcast. It, last one?
I don't even know anymore.
I think so it's genetic testing.
Okay. And, you know, I've heard of it. Now that you say it, I'm like, that sounds familiar, but I didn't know.
So it, like, tells you where you're from, like, what you are, like, your history, your background.
Okay,
like,
I have heard of that.
Like, I'm Western European or something. Yeah, so we both did that.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's so fun
it's
to find
fun.
Out.
It is.
Yeah.
We're all sorry. Mutts. I didn't mean to digress from your amazing story.
We're not mutts as much as we thought we were.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're a little bit more pure Western. Like, yeah, 90. I'm 99. And I'm 99% Western European.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that crazy?
So funny. Yeah. So.
My friends were like, you're just countrified Southern. Like, that's all you are. I was like, oh.
That's awesome.
That is funny.
I'm British, damn it.
Yeah.
So this is what happens on the podcast. We start talking about one thing, and then we start
completely
digressing.
Hey, it's
so,
kind of fun,
but we're sorry, because you have a great story, so continue.
Sorry, yes, continue.
Oh, gosh. I went to University of Iowa for dental hygiene. Back in that day, you could have your choice of bachelor programs in dental hygiene.
And so you have a bachelor's in hygiene.
Yeah, I have a bachelor's in dental hygiene, BSDH. And I am a huge Iowa Hawkeye fan. I have remained a huge Hawkeye fan. My family laughs at me every Saturday in my family room. Becomes a Hawkeye fest by myself if I have to. And I scare my dog because I yell so loud when they
score. That's great.
My dog goes and hides under the couch.
That's me in college football. So I'm
that college. Yeah, it is college football.
Well, I'm Gamecock.
You're an SEC.
Yeah, SEC
Sorry.
Girl.
Sorry about that.
Well, SEC is going to come back. And Gamecocks are going to come back. Don't get all right. I'm not going to go there because it's not football season yet. And
I know we're close. Though.
I hibernate my energy for football.
Yeah, I've been kind of gearing up because it's getting really close. I mean, we're August 1st this week.
You're on Facebook Live some of your time there. You
Facebook
should.
Live your video.
That would
such
be
a proponent of Facebook Live.
That would be You do some of that.
Everyone else do it, but me.
Yeah, exactly. No, so I do love that. That was a highlight of my college career. And dental hygiene school was hard for me. It was not an easy road. I was really young. I graduated when I was 21. Now I'm starting to forget. So it was with my bachelor's. So I think I lacked some maturity going through the schooling and everything. And now I look back, I'm like, geez, I wish I could have taken advantage of a few more things. Mm-hmm. But you always do that, right? When
you're
looking back at things.
Did you have any dental experience or exposure before that?
No. The reason I wanted to go into dental hygiene is that my dear friend is my mom's best friend named Joan Cook. Hi, Joan.
Shout out to Joan.
And my other dear friend, Janelle, worked together at a dental office, and they're both dental hygienists. They took me to the Chicago Midwinter Dental Convention when I was 16, and I came home with humongous bags of toothbrushes and toothpaste, and, you know, this is a 16-year-old. I'm like, cool, I think I like this dental hygiene thing, you know.
They bribed
and,
you to.
Yeah, and so I just right then decided that's what I was going to do. I never looked at anything else. I applied to one school, I think, and I got to go there. It was pretty simple back in the day. That was back before you guys were born. And it was just a really cool way to do it. And Joan and Janelle have remained friends of mine to this day. They
shout out to Janelle.
That's right. Yes, both. They have, it sounds funny to say they've retired because they are the most hip and active people I know. And so it's not, you know, it's kind of hilarious to say they're retirees. Sorry, guys. Someday I want to bring you to this show because they would have a blast, actually.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. They still come to Midwinter because they love it. So
you have to introduce
they
us.
Loved it. Yeah, you would love them.
Fun.
They are very, they've always been into education. Mm-hmm. We used to make a big party of going to Chicago Midwinter every year and get hotel rooms and just be silly. And it was a great time. So they've been my buddies my whole career. Been great. So they were my introduction to dental hygiene. And I thought, I'm a pretty practical girl, so I thought, well, that'd be a good thing because I can work when I want to. I knew someday I wanted to have a family. And at that time, that was really kind of the mentality of dental hygiene. You could go into it, you could work part-time and be a mom. And it wasn't like nursing that you would have overnight shifts and things like that. So that was kind of my mentality there. Dental hygiene school was so hard. When I got out, I was really not that thrilled with it. And I was thinking that I would change my career. I thought, I'll get my license because I don't know what else to do with it, you know, with all this education I just had. But I'm going to see what happens. Fortunately, what happened is I got the best job of my life in the city of Chicago and got to work for a wonderful dentist named Ted Gehrig. And Ted still practices, too. And he was such a mentor to me, taught me so much about business. I got to run a hygiene program of a pretty large practice and learned an awful lot there. We started a periodontal program because at that time there really weren't, you know, these scaling root planing programs. And he sent me to Dale Carnegie to learn to speak. He was just a great guy. Unfortunately, when I went to Dale Carnegie, I had just learned that I was pregnant, and I am the sickest person pregnant in the universe.
Oh, no.
So I would be in that class like feeling like I was on a boat, feeling seasick. So I don't think I got as much out of it as I could have, but it was still, you know, something that it was a big impression in my life. So
that's awesome.
You know, then you go into kid years, and the way my kids are spread out, I worked very little through the first two, and then by the third one it would have cost more to pay for daycare than to actually go to work. So I did my mom sabbatical, I always call it.
I love it.
And did PTO mom, things like that for a few years. And then when my youngest was going to kindergarten, I thought, I think I'll go back to dental hygiene, see what's out there.
And so you kept your license. Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Jinx.
Yeah. And I kept going to Midwinter with my buddies. I mean, I did not give up on these fun things. But it was in the back of my mind, I have to say. It was never, you know, in the forefront. I definitely did my CEs. Although I remember once, you know, this happens to everybody in their career at some point with these kids. I remember scrambling for my last CEs, probably with my third one, right after she was born. You know, it was that crazy period of life. But since then, I've always taken way more than you ever needed anyway.
Yeah.
Through the time, I'm left-handed. And when I started practicing,
You learned right-handed?
No.
No.
No, they were, I went to the University of Iowa and they were very progressive. No hats, by the way. I am a hat-free dental hygienist of my era.
And oh, those hats are amazing.
We wore white pants and white lab coats because we were really advanced and ahead of our time. Shut up, Andrew.
That's so funny now,
I know, it's really funny.
Oh, didn't you just call out Iowa the other day?
Oh, I might have called out Iowa.
Oh.
Not a school in specific, just the whole state.
Yeah, really, the whole
Sorry,
state.
Sorry, Iowa. And I was like, why Iowa?
Iowa
City
is
one of the most fun places. If you ever get there, you will take eat your words. Yeah, it's a beautiful town.
I challenge you, Iowa City.
Yeah, invite us.
Yeah, I think you need to. It's pretty cool. Now I lost my track. See, you guys.
Sorry,
I know. We do. ADD. Really sorry.
No, yeah. I'm just kidding.
You took your mom's sabbatical.
Yeah.
And then
okay.
You started coming back.
Yeah. So I went back and I loved my job too. I got to start up a hygiene department for a local dentist and loved working with her too. She was terrific. Oh, the left-handed part. That's
oh, yes,
what I was
yes,
trying
yes.
to tell. So early on, I was crammed into a lot of operatories in funky ways. You know, I'd be next to a spit bowl, mm-hmm. me and the spit bowl, and people would want to use it still sometimes, which like I...
Cuspidor.
We really, yes, right? Yeah, I love calling it a spit bowl. It's just like so much more disgusting. So I would learn how to roll back from the cuspidor really fast because you don't want that splashing on you, right?
Yeah. That's so hard. Oh,
but
God.
I would get stuck. I mean, I was stuck among these, you know, the equipment. And I really had to torque myself into funky positions. Well, I think back about what I did over my career. In my wonderful office in Lincoln Park, we had very nice equipment. We were in more open operatories even then. It was pretty advanced for the time, too. That was, you know, late 80s, early 90s. And it just, I probably picked up some really bad ergonomic habits in those early years.
Sure.
So it didn't take long, really, for my neck and my shoulder and my arm to start giving me troubles. So in that job that I had when I was, after I went back with kids, there was a point where I could barely function during the days. I would make it through the days, I would drive home, I would fall on my bed, and I remember being at a book club and I kind of ticked them off because I just could never make it. because I couldn't function. I couldn't read the books anymore because I couldn't, my eyes were crossing. It was horrible pain.
Yeah.
And so I had to go through a lot of treatment thing. I never had surgery. There's a fantastic physiologist, physiatrist, I should say, in Chicago. And he's one of three doctors in the whole country that does these high injections in your neck. And he has been my saving grace. He does these cortisone injections way up in the top, you know, pretty much my brain. And I would hate to see myself in the operatory because they put you in some weird position and it's kind of an odd, I'm like, just don't even tell me
what
all these
like
people
right
are going to be looking at, right? So that has saved me. However, I really couldn't practice a ton. I had to limit myself greatly. And that's when I learned about education. My friend Joan, again, to the rescue, said, you know, a friend of ours teaches in the College of Lake County, and it would be fun for you to talk to her and talk about education. I'm like, oh, boy, you know, hygiene school was so hard, and I don't know that would be me. I just don't think I'm, you know.
Could torture people like that?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think that's for me. She goes, no, really. And I know this girl, and she's very, very nice. So I'm like, well, maybe things have changed, and boy, had they changed. Some terrific people at the school, and I had the opportunity then to become clinical adjunct faculty, and that was just a blast. I just love working with students. They may not always think that, I guess, but I do. I think they're just so fun, and they're just little sponges, and it's exciting to teach instrumentation and really help people help others become healthy. So that became something that I just love. So I was still working clinically a little bit, doing some adjunct. And then they asked me if I'd like a classroom course. And I started doing that, and it's a theory course on medical concerns and special needs. Love that class. And I taught maybe twice, three times. I walked into my director's office and I said, I think I need some teaching methodology. I'm going to start my master's. And
nice.
I started it pretty fast after that. And that was really cool. It's great that we can do those online now.
Mm-hmm.
I could never get my master's when my kids were younger because it would have meant driving an hour. and being right. away from home several nights a week, and that just wasn't going to work for our lives. So very exciting to do that, and I learned that I really love to write when I was in that program because it's all online. Did you do yours online, Michelle?
Mine was called Mixed Mode, where so I did like all my research at the medical college in my city, and then I did my teaching because I had mine's in dental hygiene education.
Okay.
So I did my student teaching at the college where I taught anyway, so I could be on location where I was. But the classes were video I could watch. And those weren't like daily, but like maybe once a week we would have like a video course.
And it's so cool how online. Flexible education can be now. So that worked out so well. And that
I
was
love
fun.
It.
And then after I was done, I thought, well, I kind of want to do a little more with this writing. Let's see what I can do. I met a couple people. Angie Stone, who so many people know.
She's
our little buddy, Angie Stone.
Who doesn't love Angie. We love you, Angie. There's
shout out to Angie again.
I know. We do love Angie.
And Gaylene Baker, who works for AcrossTech. Some you may or may not know her, but she also is in my area. And I happened to have lunch with both of them within a short period of time. And I said, how did you get into what you're doing? And they both said, I went to Career Fusion. I'm like, well, what the heck is that? So
it's a big topic while we've been at RDH.
I bet, because many people who are here have been. So the more I learned about it, I thought, well, it'd be kind of cool to go to that and learn how you can write for, you know, dental hygiene publications. I thought, yeah, I like to write, so maybe I'll go learn about that. And when I got there, I couldn't believe how many more opportunities there are in our dental world than I ever imagined. I really hadn't stepped out at all, I was blown away by what was available. So with my love of instrumentation, over time, I got to know Lewis Myers and Nicole Schreiber, who worked at American Eagle at that time, and she now works for Young. And we just, things have evolved into an education program for American Eagle, and it's just been so much fun to share this technology that they have in instrumentation with hygienists, because for me, it's not about what I'm doing, it's about the fact that I can help someone avoid the damage that I've had in my whole left side. Like right now, we're sitting here, my whole arm is numb. If I can help younger people avoid that, younger practitioners, it will make my life so happy. It's so important to me that we have ergonomics that help us help others.
So maybe let's kind of transition into what kind of things that you're teaching now at American Eagle. But before we do that, let's talk about the challenge yesterday that we did.
The sharpening challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell our listeners like what was the challenge, or what was the purpose of it?
So Lori Lauder has done some research in sharpening.
Shout out to Lori.
Yes.
She'll be on the podcast soon.
She is one of our clinical educators, rockstar hygienist, of course. Everybody knows she writes for RDH and is a wonderful person to top it off. So, yes, shout out to Lori. Mm-hmm. And she had done some research on sharpening a couple years ago, had published it, and we thought, let's do something kind of complimentary. Let's have people stop at a booth and sharpen at H67 and let them choose what method they want. We have all kinds of stones over there and various electronic versions mm-hmm. of what people can use.
What was
use.
That one wheel thing that we were talking about yesterday?
The wheel thing. Oh,
that
the Premier Disc Sharpener.
Premier Disc.
I use
that.
No.
Yeah, we use it at our school to teach, so I was able to borrow one.
The one with the, it looked like a protractor on the top of it.
Yes, it does look like a protractor.
Michelle Labasi was using it yesterday.
Was
she? Like, can I watch you do this?
Yeah.
I don't understand, but yeah, there's like numbers and letters.
Yeah. You have to read the directions to really learn.
We don't do that in hygiene.
I was going to say.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of times I do end up lining up the numbers and letters for my students. They're not really super interested in reading.
So the letters and the numbers go with the instrument?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I really love that disc for sharpening curettes in particular. When it gets to sickles, even universal curettes, I probably prefer a stone myself. It seems a little easier to line up than the letters and numbers, but it is a really good system. It allows you to keep that toe rounded when you come around it. I don't sharpen much anymore, but it's been fun. We thought that it would be interesting to see. Let's see what happens when people use their choice of stone And they know that that's what we're doing, that we're actually saying, hey, will you sharpen these for us and let us see what happens and see what they do when they do their best.
And so are you taking those back and just comparing them all?
We're able to cross-section them.
Oh.
And we'll be able to, you know, see how those edges turned out. Andrew's see laughing because he did
one. See how many edges I put
how
on
many
there.
Edges?
How many bevels or whatever you call it on there.
Well, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting sure. because in Lori's study, out of 46 edges that were looked at, only two came back within acceptable range of what they came from the factory as. So
nervous.
But we thought, well, then let's let people who actually, you know, they know that that's what we're looking at.
Yeah.
Try their best and see what happens. Maybe it'll be higher. Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of our little idea, just
fun.
To write that up.
Yeah.
Something fun to do. It's not a peer-reviewed study at this point. Hopefully we're planning some of those, but at this point we thought we'd do just something pretty low level.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of keep the bias as low as possible. Yeah, a little pilot study. Kind of
yeah.
a practice run.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I know that you don't sharpen much anymore with the XP instruments mm-hmm. that you have, but do you know much about like different stones and all that? I mean, do you educate people on that or not?
Yeah,
as much?
A little bit, you know, through American Eagle, but mm-hmm. at school in mm-hmm. my job, you know, we teach sharpening at school just like you do, mm-hmm. Michelle.
Yeah.
And we use stainless steel at school, so I have plenty of experience with that. I never felt very confident in sharpening until I started teaching, and I had a hygienist there who was left-handed, kind of show me her method, and that helped me tremendously.
Nice.
So I feel more confident than I used to, but I still, you know, I had one cross-sectioned myself, and it wasn't exactly
perfect.
Stellar either. So,
that's,
you know,
yeah,
even when you're trying
part.
Your best,
yeah.
it is tough to get to that perfect edge.
It is.
So it'll be fun to see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's somewhat related to XP technology, but not necessarily. You know, we just want to put more research out there. There's not a lot of instrument research.
Wow, really?
Mm-hmm. There really isn't.
Especially since that's our life.
Yeah, they are our medical.
Our tools.
Right,
yeah.
They are our class one medical devices that we
yeah.
use.
Yeah.
You know, they're classified as that because they're able to enter the body and alter the tissues of someone's body in some way. And when you hear that statement, that's from the CDC, I believe.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
It's pretty intense. We throw those instruments around. They're whipped into a bag. And you think about what we're doing to them, you're like, holy smokes, we need to be a little more careful with these.
Yeah. yeah.
No matter what instruments you're using, these are our surgical tools. And we
yeah.
really are doing a form of surgery when you really think about it, because we are
absolutely.
Altering the tissue in some
absolutely.
Way. Mm-hmm. So that's enlightened me quite a bit to start thinking about our instruments that way as well. And when you're looking, I mean, a surgeon wouldn't use five-year-old surgical blades. You know, when you're doing
right.
surgery, even most dentists will not use an old burr.
No.
You know, we should not be using
old instruments.
It's dangerous. It's dangerous for our patients. It's actually kind of, if you start getting into the ethics, you know, in our
yeah.
ethics classes we
yeah.
teach, it doesn't really match up with our ethics
no.
in dental hygiene. So.
And who wants to work harder?
Well,
that's what kills me.
I am such a snob when it comes to sharpened instruments.
Yeah,
like my students
right.
have, I go over there to help them. I'm like, sharpen this. I won't sit down until this thing
I
is sharpened.
I do that too, Michelle.
Like, yeah.
I can't work like this.
Right.
I'm going to drop it like the mic. I'm like, get rid of this.
Like when I was right last night on our
okay,
podcast.
Okay, let's move on yeah. from that.
Aha.
So let's talk maybe go into what kind of, so you said there's not much research out there, but you guys are doing research. And
we're doing a little.
And things like
yeah.
that. What are you guys doing
trying.
At American Eagle? What kind of projects are you working on?
You know, American Eagle's an interesting company because it's fairly small as a, it's the second largest instrument company in the world, but that's far, far behind number one, for one. It's a wonderful company in the sense that it's family owned. And they really have taken care of they have a fabulous philosophy there of taking care of one another. If someone in the factory is ill, for example, they take care of that person. They don't say, tough beans, guy, you've got to be off for 3 months because your child has cancer. Well, sorry about that. They actually have taken care of those
That's
families
awesome.
Before. Yeah, it's an amazing company that way. And one of the reasons I really like being with them, because they really want to do the right thing. And that's what they want to do for hygienists as well. It
yeah.
transfers over into the whole philosophy for what they make for us as well. And dentists, you know, they make tools for dental dentist too. So it's kind of, that part has really, you know, grabbed my heart.
Yeah.
So let me just jump in for a second. So as far as the tools for the dentist and hygienist, the restorative instruments, I've actually been trying some XP restorative instruments.
That's right, you have. Yeah.
And because it's basically non-stick, and I've had some really, really good instrument or restorations come out from
really?
It.
Oh, good.
And so much that one of my assistants always grabs, because I have two instruments, and she always goes and grabs the gold instruments for me. Mm-hmm. And she puts
that's
them out.
That's always something, like, you have your go-to, and if it's not there, you're like, I can't work.
Right.
Like, what do I do?
Exactly.
You don't feel like it's not going to be as good, or it's going to take you longer or something. So,
and while it's, yeah, while it's good for
volumes,
us,
I think.
Think about what you just did for your patient. Yeah. That patient now has a quality restoration with no gaps in it because you used a higher quality instrument. I mean, what a wonderful thing you're doing for your patient.
And the funny thing about all of that was I never had to ask my assistant to do that.
She just noticed it.
She's like, wow,
that's
a game changer. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, then, great, thanks.
Yeah, I think there's
that's
real...
one of the best ones you've ever done. I'm like, I've done some pretty good ones.
And like, come on, come on now.
Come on. Oh. A 10 is a 10 is a 10.
Oh, Lord.
But whatever.
No ego there about none. Those restorations. No,
I'm
none.
Telling you, this feelings room in your faces, is I'll filled with in. His ego after this podcast. Like,
it's pretty big. Yeah, it's a big room, too.
Yeah, we are in a big
room.
I feel a
little foggy
in
here. Yeah, like it's
Michelle's
Andrew's
right.
ego lingering over top of us.
I love it. Sorry, so I cut you off yet again. You're talking about hygiene XP.
Yeah, so XP technology is something people don't all know about in dental hygiene. It's growing, and actually it's kind of cool because I've seen more and more hygienists being aware of it and even understanding what it is. What I say is XP technology, and not just me, but it is a whole separate category of hand instruments. We have cryogenically heated stainless steel that we've always used, that we love, and we rely on. And we learn to use those a certain way. This is a new category of metals. And that category has allowed us to change some of the ways we even use our hygiene instruments. While they're shaped the same way, they really are not the same instrument. So just like we have cavitrons and piezos under the magnetostrictive category, we now have stainless steel instruments and XP technology, because that is a patented technology. And it's one of a kind, and that's why it is the only one out there right now. Although another company is bringing out a sharpened free version of their instruments, which personally I think is cool because it validates the category.
That's a great way to put it.
So XP technology is something very interesting because it is not a coating the way they do it. It's actually a very, all of us hygienists love physics, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, especially what time is it this morning?
Exactly. I hate physics. There's nothing like it, right? Even my daughter took it in high school, and I went for the conference. I was looking through the book, and I started getting sweaty and shaky. It's just not my thing. But this is interesting. It's a patented process that embeds titanium nitride into a very high-grade substrate metal. And learning about the metals has been a really interesting thing, too. When those are heated and broken down into macroparticles and microparticles, the patented part of the system is these bends and turns and filtering systems and magnet systems that bring the very smallest particles to that high-grade substrate. And they aren't a coating. It's not slapped on there like a layer of paint. It's more embedded like you would varnish a piece of wood rather than, you know, just slapping it on. Mm-hmm. It's not going to peel off. It's not going to flake off. So that's been an interesting thing because it does sound like a coating when you first look at it, but that when you get down to the anatomic level, it isn't. And it doesn't go through and through, though. So some people believe that is, but it actually changes that metal for, I don't know, a few microns, I guess, is basically it. So that metal comes out so hard, they can do some cool stuff with it. They can make our instruments, well, it's going to wear much more slowly than what we've been used to. So that means that we won't have to sharpen it because it'll last as long as our stainless steel have lasted before without ever sharpening it, though. You would have sharpened over and over that time. In fact, there's an article I read in Dimensions of Dental Hygiene by Mary Kay Scaramucci. Have you read her articles on instrumentation? She's very good, from University of Cincinnati, Blue Ash. I was fortunate to meet her at a class one day. And she writes a lot about instrumentation. She wrote an article that said, really, after about 35 strokes.
Yeah. Okay. So I have heard that.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what I teach
we
students.
Need to be sharpening
our
instruments.
I said 25 to 35 strokes. You should be.
Yes.
So if
yes,
you're
25 to 35.
Not, if you're doing a scaling root planing in quad one, mm-hmm. you're done with that. And you haven't sharpened before you go to quad two.
Right. Exactly.
You're really just working at a degraded stroke at that
right.
point.
And you think about that, that's not many strokes.
No,
we do
not
that
at all.
Pretty darn quickly.
Get some tenacious calculus. You mm-hmm. can be 100, 150, like in there for a long time.
And then you go to sharpen and you may change, alter that working edge. Mm-hmm. And so now you're compromising your ability to do your best as well for that patient. So this allows us to maintain that same working angle the whole entire time that we're working with this instrument and maintain that level of sharpness, I guess, is what I want to say, to remove the calculus that's there all the way through a scaling root planing. And it's a kind of a funny story how I even tried it. It was before I'd gone to Career Fusion. I was working with a friend of mine in her office on Saturdays. It's my little Saturday job. And mm-hmm. she said, I got these new instruments. They are the coolest things. I'm like, oh, instrument. I have never tried anything that I've liked besides the one brand I've used my whole life. And she said, no, really, you have to try these. These are different. I go, no way. Forget it. I'm not trying them. I'm not kidding you. I'm done trying instruments.
It's amazing when we get stuck sometimes.
Oh, my gosh. I was being such a snotty educator. So she came. This is like a commercial. It was hilarious. She stuck her head in my room while I was running behind with this patient that was new and had very tenacious calculus. Mm-hmm. And she sticks her head in and goes, tenacious? And I'm like, yeah.
Here
she
you go.
She threw them on my tray. She goes, try these now.
I'm fairy that drops
okay, them. Mom, know. You know.
I'm desperate now. I'll do it.
Exactly. So I thought, well, now they're contaminated. I guess I'll try them. And I picked them up, and I started using them. I'm like, immediately knew there was something different about them. I didn't know what, but I intuitively lightened up, for one thing, because they are so good about at removing the calculus. You could feel it melting away, basically.
Wow.
So you didn't need the lateral pressure that
And so speaking with Lewis just briefly yesterday, he said it was more of like an exploratory scaling stroke where it's a lighter pressure. You're not
exactly
putting that lateral pressure pulling up, It's just more of like a lighter scaling stroke.
Yeah, it is. It's a modified scaling stroke. You're holding it like an explorer. Being a teacher, we're holding it like an explorer. I think of it as using the hardness of the metal to remove the calculus,
not
just like
hand.
We use the power of a Cavitron to remove the calculus,
yeah.
the metal, remove the calculus. So we start from the outside of the piece of calculus, and we work to the tooth. And immediately people say, and I thought this too,
burnish.
We're going to burnish that calculus.
Yeah.
But when you really start thinking about this, your working edge is perfect. And you are holding it much lighter grasp, like an exploratory grasp. And it's a light instrument to top it off. Mm-hmm. It is the lightest instrument in the industry, both the Talentuff and the XP, by the way, because of the resin handles they have. You have such good tactile sensitivity when you get to the tooth. You know when you're done. And because that edge is perfect, you can feel that you have not burnished. You're using a lighter stroke. So without the lateral pressure, there's less chance of any damage to the root surface.
And so it's not so much of a popping off.
Not any popping off. It's kind of shaving it off.
I was going to say it's more of a
yeah.
shaving
mm-hmm.
and not a...
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the gratification of that pop.
You know what? I
think
that
was probably what I'd have to work through the most is like when it goes bing and
you
like pull this chunk out and it's like...
I had to work through that like, big time.
Excited.
Really, because I mean, 30 years.
Yeah.
I've been doing this 30 years, and I was really proud of my scaling root planing skills, mm-hmm. my lateral pop, and bam, I could blow them off there better than most.
But I'm thinking, especially with students, that less tissue trauma because of that slip or that mm-hmm. tug and gouge the maxillary arch or something. You know?
I agree. The other thing that you might think about with instructing as well is how little their muscles are built up in their hands and
mm-hmm.
how they just don't have the oomph to get that lateral pressure sometimes in a harder case.
No.
And I've dealt with more burnished calculus because they just can't get that lateral pressure and pop going.
Mm-hmm.
Just the other day, I had to go in and just pop. I had got a chance to
yeah.
do my bam, boom. And she looked at me and went, oh, my word.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So
It but, is all I can do to let them sit there and continue to battle it out. Sometimes I'm just like, get up. Come on.
Yeah,
well, just the patience had it enough. Your parent, it's just not going to happen today.
And there are times that, you know, it's beyond their skill level, their scope they're at.
They're
and
baby hygienists.
We need, and we need to help them a little bit to get that.
Baby hygienists.
They are babies.
They're just learning to walk like a little baby giraffe. And you just got to help them.
We love you, students.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you're a baby.
No, just because he's not working with them. But it's not to be an insult. I mean,
not
you have
all.
To grow and get better. And right now we're in the semester of they have just saw their first set of patients. Like they practiced half the semester. Now we're on to the second half where they see it. And I have not worked this semester before. I'm usually with the senior ones teaching like advanced instrumentation, advanced fulcruming, that kind of stuff.
What a difference.
And I can appreciate now where they, what, when I see them as seniors, I'm like, how do you not know this already? Oh my God. Now I know why they don't know it, but now I'm like incredibly impressed in what they are doing in a semester and a half until I see them.
Yes. It is pretty incredible.
It is astounding. Mm-hmm. It really is.
We just finished our summer semester, which is their second full semester of seeing patients. Mm-hmm. And they had had preclinic before that. Mm-hmm. And over the summer, they just go from those caterpillars to butterflies.
It's so true.
Unbelievable.
So true.
And it's so impressive. And they work so hard.
They do.
Yeah, it's really incredible.
Hygiene school is no freaking joke. How often do you see students cry?
Oh, geez.
I'd say every other day for me.
Yeah,
maybe-ish.
Weekly-ish.
It depends
maybe
on the class.
Every other week.
Some are more sensitive than others.
I'd say
but
more aggressive in South Carolina, maybe.
Maybe.
Instructors.
Maybe. Funny. No.
I mean.
No, they do it to themselves, actually.
Oh,
so I most of the time I'm like,
we're
listen,
perfectionists.
The person before you survived, I survived. The next person's going to survive. You're going to survive. This is just a day.
We're such a perfectionist mindset that's what it does happen. So there is a, I think I've been getting more requests from schools to learn from faculty want to start to learn about XP technology.
Well, that's really good because I mean they need to be teaching the most current materials and tools that are out there.
Yes, I agree. And the one thing I've played around with these, I don't think they're for the beginner because as you've moved back in clinic. I've gone through all stages from preclinic through. I think it's a good introduction for the advanced perio point, maybe the third semester, and let them get their feet wet with it because we do have to change their methodology a little bit. And that can be tricky for faculty, too. So there's a lot of
the basics.
You guys
start at the basics.
And there's
get that foundation.
There's room for everything, too. They should at least be exposed to it, I believe. But I am impressed by how many schools are giving us a call and saying, you know, we'd like to bring this. We're offering, Lori and I are putting together a faculty calibration course.
So smart.
So that we can, that for teaching methodology and accreditation purposes, it is something that people need.
Yeah.
So we are doing that, and that's going to be, we have a couple of them scheduled. So we're going to be piloting that
this
fall and getting going. And that's, I think, going to be, she and I especially will love that piece of it.
Yeah, because, for sure.
We'll be able to help even more people, you know, start out to learn about it and be aware of what they have available to them.
That's really great. And there's faculty calibration as a whole.
We all know.
So very needed.
And so challenging.
So
challenging to get done.
But very needed.
So, so that's been, you know, something exciting to work on.
Yeah.
And then we have, you know, webinars and courses. And we have hands-on courses we can do for, you know, components or study clubs. And we've been doing a lot. We bring typodonts and instruments. And it's really fun. You know, it's a lot of hands-on. And everybody loves to play with instruments. Sometimes I have to say, shut the cassette now. Put the instrument
down.
You know,
put them down.
We love our instruments.
We do love them.
So we've been having a blast expanding this education program and bringing not only to continuing education, but now we're seeing possibly to schools as well. So
that's awesome. Andrew, I saw you over there writing.
Oh, actually, the funny thing is, as I said, I wrote down save time to talk about webinars and education.
Okay.
As you guys said, and we have webinars. And I'm like,
put this down. So let's talk about that. Like, where can they find that? How they can find you?
Good point.
How they can become more educated and take these courses, or when these faculty calibrations start up, how do we get involved with it?
Yeah, We have marketing at AmericanEagle.com. It's a great place to go, or the website for AmericanEagle.com is a spot to get started to reach out. You can also just email me. My email is at American Eagle too, so it's just K, like Karen, and then my last name, which is S-I-E-B-E-R-T, at am-eagle.com. That little dash in there is kind of tricky.
Yeah.
But we schedule live one-on-one or team webinars, and they are 1CE. We have AGD accreditation, so Perfect. We nice. Will be able to do that, and we provide it through CE Zoom, who I know
Shout
you guys
Sarah,
know.
Because that's how our thing should be provided through CE Zoom.
Awesome. Shout out for sure. That's been terrific for us. We've kind of been a pilot for them as well to try this CE distribution, and that's working out pretty nicely.
Good.
So they can either get a hold of me, and we do it based on the person's schedule. You know, I've done them on Saturday night at 9 o'clock. So, right. You know, whatever works for people, and then they can ask their own questions. So it's not a canned recorded version of it.
Mm-hmm. Is it a cost?
It is for you. No, it's free. Good point.
And you are doing this on a Saturday at 9 o'clock?
Sometimes I do. Yeah, exactly. Or Lori or Stacy or
can I tell you
that's troopers,
that's the
warriors,
kind of people that I've met so far with American.
I was going to say amazing.
I emailed you late at night and said, "Hey, what about this?" I think it was. I asked you one time. Can you address the going in the ultrasonic the instruments together? Real
right.
Quick? Because
cool.
That's always
good point.
And then a problem. And then,
that's where this webinar comes into play. Buying XP technology is great. But really, our goal is, and our mission is, to educate you about these few little things that you need to know, because it is a different category of instruments. We need to educate you on how to reprocess them. And it's very similar, but we need to have you using a certain solution. There's many solutions that work. Mm-hmm. We have a long list.
Super long list.
But you want to use one of those. And some people aren't. So you may look at the list and go, oh, we use that. But you need to know that. And then you need to know about this modified scaling technique.
Mm-hmm.
I've met hygienists just the other day. In fact, one brought 3 broken instruments back. She had switched from using heavy rigid Gracies in stainless steel to XP technology. So guess what? And she hadn't been educated. So she was using lateral pressure and pop, and bam, off flew the tips.
Oh, okay. So that's another reason that you don't need to be
So
doing
we
that.
Really want people to be safe and be aware of what they are using. So these webinars, it's 1 hour, and you'll have enough information to get you started. And then you can take hands-on courses if you want beyond that, and we can come to your area and do that. Mm-hmm. But that webinar is just enough to get you peer-to-peer education. Our sales reps are wonderful for American Eagle, but there aren't many, and they're spread out quite a bit. And so they can't always get to every office. They're not all hygienists either. So some are, though, and that's really nice, too. But it's an easy way to just know enough to be safe and maximize the lifespan of those instruments, which is also a big goal of mine, is to help people make them last.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, I can't say enough about coming to, like, the different, like, Under One Roof and things like that, because you guys are all, you know, you guys are here, all the big ones. And, I mean, Lewis is here, you're here, we run into you guys all the time.
Yes, because we found that bringing an educator to the meetings has also made a big difference for educating on the spot.
Yes.
We can have a type of there, people can feel how to use them, I can show them how to slow down and how to lighten up and get that muscle to relax a little bit. So just even a quick lesson sometimes is enough to get people started.
Yeah.
So.
Well, can we get your email address one more time for everyone to contact you?
KSIEBERT at am-eagle.com.
Perfect.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Karen.
Yes. Thank you. Guys. And she's the best and the sweetest. And that is why we love all of our guests, because you guys are really amazing and just good people.
Yes.
It is
appreciate
fun.
You. 7:30 on a Saturday
7:30
morning.
On a Saturday morning after on day 3 of craziness. Yeah.
It's called Vente size.
Vente.
Yeah. Vente.
That's Starbucks.
Yeah.
Starbucks.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Karen.
All right, thanks, Karen.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye. Listeners, I want to tell you a story. A story I found on the web, which makes this Scaling the Web with Andrew. So this week in Scaling the Web, I did something a little bit different. I'm not going to read anything, so you listeners are welcome. I will describe something, though, and that's going to be the hard one. We did this one test, just kind of going on describing things, where it's like a team-building exercise where you sit back-to-back
And one person has a paper and a pencil or a pen or whatever, and the other person has a picture that's given to them, and they can only describe how to draw the picture. So for instance, if it was like a star, that's what the person had to draw. I would say, start 2 inches from the top of the page and put your pen down like right in the middle, you know, like equal left from left and right. And they put that down. I would try and describe to them how to draw the star. That's what we're going to try and do today. Hopefully my communication is very clear.
I don't know if I was mentally prepared for this.
Well, it'll be fine. It's mostly for the listeners. You know what? Why don't you just go floss your teeth or go do something, and then I'll tell the listeners all about this, and we'll be good to go.
Fantastic.
Sound good?
Works for me.
Okay. And so this actually comes from one of our listeners, Deepak from London, and he and I were talking. Shout out. So this is what happened. There's a Facebook group for hygienists. It's called like dental hygiene therapists or something like that. And it's mostly UK people. And someone had asked about, can you get kind of like what we say, continuing education? Someone specifically asked, are there any podcasts in which I can get this? And he mentioned The Tale of Two Hygienists and tagged me in it. And so then he and I started talking kind of like in private. And I said, well, you know, kind of explain, how does your guys' thing work? Because, you know, for us, we have to have, you know, a testing. We have to have, you know, this and this for it to count as CE. And he kind of explained the whole thing. He said, but what you should check out is a thing called dentinaltubules.com. So I went to Dentinal Tubules. So Dentinal Tubules is a website. It's kind of like almost like a CE website. So for instance, they have upcoming live events. On January 12th, they have decision making, mechanical versus adhesive dentistry, which is basically as a dentist trying to figure out, should you be doing alloys or should you do some sort of an adhesive dentistry like resins or crowns or whatever. There's one on aesthetic crown lengthening, diagnostic and surgical principles by Edward P. Allen. They have across the top, they have a Tubules Live. They have a community. They have their partners. They have directory. They have cases that you can look at. There's just different forums. It's actually quite cool. And so that was something I wanted to pass on before I forgot about it and before I got buried too far on my list of things to share with the listeners is dentinaltubules.com. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. So no story, but that's what it is. Let me ask you one thing real quick. Oh, wait, never mind. You don't do restorative. It's okay.
I passed so many restorative things in the exhibit hall today. I was like, boring. Boring. Moving on. I was like, oh, piezoscalar. Let me see that. You can do surgery? That's so cool.
Oh, my gosh. So this is one topic right here is microbrush stamp technique, which I know you don't care about. But for class one composites, you can use like a condenser to, you know, condense all your composite in there, and you should put like a little bit of bond on it so it doesn't stick. You can use all sorts of different things to get the resin in there. But I like to do this microbrush stamp technique where you use a microbrush with some bond on it, and you can you still contour everything. Like these are just for class ones. You wouldn't use them for anything else necessarily, but you can condense a little bit with it. I still like to use a condenser, but then you take your microbrush and you can actually shape and form your composite with a microbrush and get a nice shine on it. Cause there's a lot of, bonding agent on there as well. And they have it on the site, Dentinal Tubules. I'm so happy. Sorry. I know you don't care. It just made me happy.
Yeah, I kind of blocked you out. I didn't even listen.
It's okay. It's fine.
Class one occlusal. I was like,
Think about your boots.
Yeah, I'm so sad about my boots. Okay. Well, very cool site. Thanks, Deepak.
It's about that time. Grab your blanket and a glass of wine. It's story time with Michelle.
Okay, so this week, I am looking at a research brief from the ADA, which I normally don't look at their stuff, but whatevs. It's from the Health Policy Institute, and it caught my attention because it was about elder care. And the topic is dental care utilization rate continues to increase among children, holds steady among working age adults and the elderly. And so I know we talk about this, and I thought it kind of included you since you work with children more than I do, and I love the elderly side a little bit more. So introduction. Since 2000, there have been, and this is from October 2015, FYI. Since 2000, there have been significant changes in dental care utilization patterns among the U.S. population. As of 2012, dental care utilization was at its highest level among children and at its lowest level among working age adults. The decline in dental care utilization among working age adults, which began in 2003 and persisted through 2012, has been driven in part by the decline in the percentage of individuals having private dental benefits, which we all know this. Conversely, dental care utilization among children, particularly those in lower income groups, has increased over the past decade. The gap in dental care use between low income and high income children has narrowed dramatically, while for adults it has widened. So the ADA's Health Policy Institute, or the HPI, has been tracking trends in dental care utilization for several years, as well as studying the key drivers of recent trends. In this research brief, we updated previous research on dental care utilization patterns using newly released data from 2013. So let me go to the meat and potatoes of this article.
I already have some thoughts on that, but we'll see if the article kind of addresses it.
Okay, you want to throw them in there while I'm looking up, going down to the bottom?
It was kind of saying that the children have kind of gotten more care, or the modalities for treating them has gotten better. And it's not that. At least from what I'm seeing, it's the funding of the individual states that have decided that that's a priority now. So whereas they'll say, okay, the state will pay for children's to have sealants and things like that, but we won't pay for scaling and replaning, or we won't pay for a PFM for an adult, or we won't pay for a composite filling, we'll only pay for amalgams and things like that. So it's not necessarily, I think, that they've gotten, well, I mean, it's, I feel it's at the state level. It's the state's fault.
Probably. And they might mention this. So for the first time since 2007, dental care utilization did not decline among working age adults, a potentially important finding given it represents a break in recent trends. It remains to be seen if dental care utilization among this age group stabilizes, increases, or declines again in the coming years. For children, dental care utilization continued to increase in 2013 and is at its highest level since the MEPS, I don't know what that is. I probably could look. Oh, Medical Expenditure Panel Survey began measurement in 1996. The gains among poor children in particular have been large. Among the elderly, dental care utilization held steady from 2012 to 2013, although utilization is up significantly for this age group since 2000. The 2013 data from the MEPS provide us with a valuable benchmark on dental care utilization for all age and income groups prior to the implementation of most provisions of the Affordable Care Act. We will analyze 2014 data to try to understand the impact of the ACA. For example, beginning in 2014, many states expanded Medicaid eligibility. A number of these states provide limited or extensive dental benefits for adults in Medicaid. In fact, previous analysis estimates that up to 8.3 million adults gained dental benefits through the Medicaid expansion. Moreover, through April 2014, the take-up rate for standalone dental plans in the federally facilitated marketplaces was 15.8% for children and 18.8% for adults. Financial barriers to dental care are declining for working-age adults and the poor. It remains to be seen if these developments translate into increased dental care utilization among these groups. To put dental care utilization trends into context, it is important to note that although overall dental care utilization is declining, the volume of dental visits in federally qualified healthcare facility or centers, FQHCs, and hospital emergency departments is actually increasing dramatically. It will be interesting to see if any increased demand for dental care resulting from Medicaid expansion and the rollout of health insurance marketplaces leads to increased dental care utilization in FQHCs, hospital emergency departments, or private dental offices. New research strongly suggests that there is a capacity in dental offices to treat more patients even after large Medicaid expansions. At the same time, increased dental benefits coverage does not necessarily equate to increased access to dental care. Thank you. That sentence makes me happy. Proper enabling conditions need to be in place, such as sufficient Medicaid provider reimbursement and streamlined administrative processes in Medicaid to attract dental providers to participate in Medicaid programs. The HPI will continue to monitor the impact of the ACA and other market developments on dental care utilization patterns in the United States. Did you fall asleep?
Yep. No. I mean, it's pretty much everything that we already kind of knew. Well, the only thing I was just going to add was I am glad that they did mention that the utilization and then the carriage rate are may or may not be correlated necessarily, or the health of the kids isn't necessarily correlated to the utilization rate. That was the only thing I wanted to say. I wish it would have maybe addressed it a little bit more. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you there?
No, it definitely makes sense. And yeah, I agree. I feel like it was just it was a health brief and that was it.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Hey, good episode.
All right.
Loved it. All right. Thanks, listeners. Yeah. We love you.
Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.